Hello, I'm Jesse Graham, Audience Education Manager for Lyric Unlimited, Lyric Opera's department dedicated to education, community engagement, and new artistic initiatives. Welcome to this Lyric Opera commentary on the world premiere of Bel Canto by Jimmy Lopez. Lyric announced the commission of this new opera in 2012, but depending on how you look at it, its history goes back many hundreds of years earlier. Tupac Amaru was the last indigenous monarch of the Incas. He was executed in 1572 in Peru. On December 17, 1996, 14 members of the group called the Tupac Amaru Revolutionary Movement, or MRTA, took hundreds of dignitaries, politicians, and other eminent figures hostage in an audacious attack on a gathering at the mansion of the Japanese ambassador in Lima, Peru. All those people were there for a big celebration of the birthday of the Emperor of Japan. Most of the hostages were released pretty quickly, but the MRTA rebels kept 72 of them. Negotiations reached a stalemate that dragged on for more than 4 months, with the captors and the hostages confined together in the mansion. During this extraordinary siege, some unexpected things happened. One of the hostages ended up helping one of the captors with his drawing. One of the captors became homesick and ended up being comforted by a hostage. Some of these revolutionaries were only teenagers, and there were women as well as men. Some of the captors started learning to play the guitar, and in the living room, out of sight and range of the surrounding Peruvian government forces, they played soccer. Every day of the crisis was covered on TV, and the world watched for 4 months to see how this surreal standoff was going to resolve. The situation ended when government commandos stormed the mansion and killed all of the rebels. Two of the government soldiers were also killed, and the raid claimed the single hostage casualty of the entire crisis. In the end, it proved to be a pivotal moment for Peru. It marked the final decline of radical revolutionary groups like MRTA, and it also sparked investigations into government corruption and human rights violations. The incident also inspired the writing of an award-winning and widely loved novel by Ann Patchett, Bel Canto. Bel Canto was published in 2001, just a few years after the real event, but Patchett purposely avoided any direct connections. No specific country is mentioned, most of the details are different, and she created characters and situations. There are clear parallels, but it's definitely fiction. In the novel, the party, and the subsequent crisis, is at the mansion of the vice president, not an ambassador's. And the celebration is in honor of the birthday of a different kind of Japanese monarch, a leading figure in Japan's electronics industry, who is there in person. There are a number of subplots at play, but the central and operatic pillar to the story is the love that blooms for two unlikely and ultimately fated couples, who fit into an age-old operatic mold. First, an elite noble couple, in this case, the Japanese electronics industrialist Katsumi Hosokawa, and the American opera diva Roxanne Kos. And then a pair of commoners, the interpreter and assistant to Hosokawa, Gen Watanabe, and the MRTA revolutionary, Carmen. A critic astutely called this book an opera in novel form. In December 2010, 9 years after the book was published, Lyric Opera of Chicago appointed world-renowned soprano Renee Fleming as its first creative consultant. One of her responsibilities was to curate the commissioning of a world premiere main stage opera for the 2015-16 season, and she already had Bel Canto in mind. That Renee Fleming would be the curator was a special stroke of serendipity. It was her recordings that Ann Patchett listened to and fell in love with during the research and writing of Bel Canto. Renee Fleming went to great lengths to find the right composer for the commission. By spring 2011, she had a list of 80 people under consideration for the job. And by fall, she and Lyric General Director Anthony Freud and Music Director Sir Andrew Davis had chosen Peruvian composer Jimmy Lopez. Jimmy Lopez was born in Lima in 1978, the son of a teacher and an architect. He approached his childhood piano lessons with only passing interest, and he listened to all the usual pop music until he was 12, when he happened to hear someone playing a two-part invention by J.S. Bach. He never looked back. It was only classical music from then on, and soon, composition. He went to the conservatory in Lima, then to the Sibelius Academy in Helsinki, Finland, where he completed his master's in music. Then he got his PhD at the University of California, Berkeley. His works have been commissioned and played by major orchestras all over the world. And if you've done the math, you've realized that he was a teenager right there in Lima when the hostage crisis happened. He says he was glued to the TV just like everyone else. Could he even have dreamed that someday he'd write an opera about it? After he agreed to be the composer of Bel Canto, Lopez took a major role in the selection of the librettist. Pulitzer Prize-winning Cuban-American playwright Nilo Cruz was an easy favorite. His prize-winning play, Anna in the Tropics, is about the power of art to change lives. But his play, Two Sisters and a Piano, is what sealed the deal for Lopez. The sisters are under house arrest, and the piano, well, it's no stretch to see a lot of parallels with Bel Canto. To top it off, the two of them found themselves to be terrific collaborators. In fact, Jimmy Lopez is the first to say that the creation of this opera is the result of a highly fruitful collaboration, not just between composer and librettist, but also with invaluable input and feedback from conductor Sir Andrew Davis, director Kevin Newbery, our Roxanne, soprano Danielle Denise, lyric general director Anthony Freud, and especially curator Renee Fleming. On that point, the dedication at the beginning of Lopez's score speaks volumes. To Renee Fleming, whose vision and determination have been a continuous source of inspiration to everyone involved in the creation of this work. There aren't a lot of operas where a significant portion of the audience will have already read the book. That's cause for a little apprehension, perhaps especially on the part of the audience members who love the novel and want to relive their experience of it. These people are going to love Bel Canto the opera, as long as they go into it recognizing how very different opera and literature are as storytelling art forms. Compare a painting to a photograph, a poem to a novel, or a ballet to a play. Every genre tells the story through its own idiomatic means, some very directly and some very abstractly. The literal play-by-play sequence of events in the novel can be told in just a few sentences. A bunch of people are taken hostage by some revolutionaries, demands are made, they spend 4 months stuck together in a stalemate. Finally, the government comes in shooting and kills all the revolutionaries and one of the hostages. The end. But is that the whole story? No way. All these vastly different people are trapped together with no idea how or when it's going to end, living with the constant threat of violence and death, and all of a sudden, this incredibly gifted woman begins to sing. And ever so slowly, something wonderful happens. Unexpected bonds are formed across vast cultural and situational divides. People discover their common humanity, and in their confinement, they begin to create a tiny utopia. Time loses its meaning. We see that music has special, universal powers, and much more. In the novel, what communicates all this? Words, or more fairly, hundreds of pages of Ann Patchett's beautiful and poetic prose paced in a miraculously transcendent way. How can an opera, with its two or three dozen pages of text, compete with that? Well, opera has other ways to communicate all those beautiful abstract feelings we get from Ann Patchett's amazing prose. Music, of course, is the central pillar of opera. It's far more abstract than words, but it is at least as powerful. But opera is a package deal. There are a whole host of elements that work in harmony with the music, so to speak. The text, the action, the sets, the costumes, the direction, the choreography, a little bit of almost every art you can name is at work in a great opera. Let's consider some of the major themes, characters, and occurrences in Bel Canto, the novel, and take a look at how they're addressed in the opera. Everybody is confined in one place, the vice president's mansion. Of course, this confinement is clear from the situation in the plot, but the opera makes it a visual reality, too, by keeping everyone in the same room together for almost the entire show. The set is the huge, opulent, gleaming white living room of the mansion. But there are a lot of people there, and almost no one can come or go, so it's crowded all the time. And everybody's on stage almost all the way through. That's confinement. And the look doesn't stay opulent for too long either. A lot of the furniture gets stacked up into barricades, and while all the hostages are dressed in classy black tie and evening gowns, as time wears on, everybody's clothes get more and more lived in and shabby. Even the dazzling white walls lose their luster as the rebels gradually cover them with crude hash marks, ticking off the passing days of the siege. Time itself is a major theme of the book. The more time that goes by, the less meaning it seems to have, and everyone's isolation from the outside world begins to change their view of reality. Ann Patchett eases the reader ever so slowly into that new reality. In opera, you don't have that much time, and there aren't enough words. What words we do have to get us there pretty quickly, and they do. Our Roxanne, Danielle Denise, aptly describes Nilo Cruz's libretto as, quote, beautifully evocative and poetic, mystical even, unquote. And his poetry is backed up by sensational lighting effects and massive, rich projections that envelop the entire stage and beyond. All that white opulence makes the mansion interior a magic canvas that can transcend reality and turn into almost anything, from a jungle to a starry night to a flock of butterflies. As the normal rules of reality gradually lose their power, the characters begin to live and relate to each other in ways that could never have happened in the real world. Which leads us to one of the biggest themes of the book, characters bonding and discovering their common humanity, building bridges over chasms of language, culture, race, and class. Just look at the two romantic pairings. First, Hosokawa and Roxanne. He's an industrialist. She's an opera diva. He's Japanese. She's from the United States. He doesn't speak English. She doesn't speak Japanese. It's even a bit of a May-December romance. He's noticeably older. And in the opera, where music speaks volumes, he's a bass to her soprano. Not a typical operatic pairing for lovers. There's a gulf between them not just culturally, but musically. For the other couple, Gen and Carmen, he's a corporate white-collar worker. She's a rebel commando. He's Japanese. She's an indigenous Peruvian. He can speak Spanish, and so can she, but their native languages are Japanese and Quechua. In the opera, they're a tenor and a mezzo-soprano. He's got the classic lover and heroic qualities befitting an operatic tenor, and her mezzo voice gives her the low range she needs to be a convincing teenage boy. If you've read the book, you'll recall that at first she's passing as male to the hostages. But as her femininity awakens, you'll hear her upper register come alive. Besides what the voice assignments give these characters dramatically, they also give the composer a full vocal palette to draw from when they all sing together as a quartet, which they do twice, very significantly, once in each act. As for the rest of Patchett's characters, almost all of them are still there in the opera. Red Cross man Joachim Messner is a baritone. The best of the two priests, Father Argedas, is there, another baritone. General Hector did not make the opera, but the other two generals did. Alfredo, the leader, is a tenor, and Benjamin is a bass. Also in the opera is Cesar, the young rebel with a gift for singing. Cesar is an enigmatic character. He's different from most of the other soldiers, more sensitive, more aware, and he doesn't really fit in. He's enraptured by Roxanne's singing and practically worships her. And he emulates her when he sings. And he's young. His voice still hasn't broken. So Cesar is a countertenor. Other characters who made it from the book into the opera? Vice President Ruben Iglesias, that sweet French couple who are so in love, Roxanne's accompanist Christophe, and the young rebels Ismael and Beatrice, and even the fatalistic but earnest Russian diplomat Viktor Fyodorov. Plus, there's a full chorus of unnamed rebels and a full chorus of unnamed hostages. The opera's big departure from the novel is the setting. Lopez and Cruz thought it was important to establish a basis in reality. So the opera definitely is set in Lima, Peru, and it's depicting the actual hostage crisis. Except, of course, the details are still mostly fiction. Musically and structurally, Bel Canto is a very operatic opera, traditional in all sorts of wonderful and comforting ways. There are arias, duets, ensembles, choruses. There are beautiful melodies and thematic development and rich, lush harmonies. The music is deeply expressive, and it's also quite varied. Variety is something that Lopez believes is especially important in a large-scale work like an opera. He says himself that as a listener, he can get bored easily, so he wants to be sure his work will hold your interest. Bel Canto is, of course, a brand new work that's never been performed or recorded, which made coming up with musical examples for this commentary a little tricky. However, thanks to the generosity of the composer, I have a few little sneak previews to play for you. But let's do it in the context of the story. After the overture, which conveys without a doubt that you're in for a dramatic experience, the first scene is the party, starting with a great full chorus about Peru, its beauty, its mystical ancientness, its hopes for the future. Then Roxanne sings an aria composed especially for the occasion, welcoming Hosokawa, the guest of honor, to this enchanted land full of promise. But it's interrupted by the revolutionaries. The chaos of the attack is brilliantly choreographed musically, especially through the two choruses, the rebels and the soon-to-be hostages. The big love relationships start to develop in the second scene, the day after the attack. In opera, people have to fall in love quickly. Of course, Hosokawa starts falling for Roxanne right away. He's a huge fan of hers already. But the relationship between Gen and Carmen starts out of the blue, with Gen feeling a strange, powerful attraction to one of the soldiers before he even knows it's a woman. Their first tentative conversation ends with a beautiful, exalting love theme, first sung by Gen, then taken over by the orchestra. You're about to hear the section where the orchestra plays the love theme. But first, a little explanation about the source of this example. Most composers nowadays write music on a computer, and the software has the capability to actually play the music back to you. Jimmy Lopez was kind enough to give me permission to use a few examples from his computer playback version of the opera. Now bear in mind that the sound you're about to hear is synthesized. It's not real instruments, but it sounds kind of like an orchestra, hopefully enough to give you a sense of it. So here's Gen's love theme for the orchestra, played by the computer.
Thank you.
Even synthesized, you can certainly hear what I mean about lush harmony. Scene 2 closes with the first of the two big love quartets I mentioned earlier. And not only does it introduce the growing love of the two soon-to-be couples, it's also the first recognition that time is changing and losing its meaning. The scene ends with a restatement of the big love theme. At the opening of scene 3, we see from the hash marks on the walls that a week has passed. In a big chorus, the hostages and the rebels daydream about the world outside the mansion. The hostages have had enough and are on the verge of rioting. But then General Alfredo has an inspired idea for de-escalating the situation. He points his gun at Roxanne and orders her to sing. At first, she doesn't know what to sing. But when she thinks about it, she comes up with just the thing. Now, what would be the perfect opera aria for this situation? How about Lascia ch'io pianga from Handel's Rinaldo? It's the aria the heroine Almirena sings when she's imprisoned by the evil Armida. We did it here at Lyric just a few seasons ago. Great choice, right? Let's listen to it. Handel's original version, that is, to refresh your memory. This is soprano Sumi Jo. In Bel Canto, Roxanne uses the first line of the original text, then for the rest, she substitutes words that match her own predicament. But if you're familiar with Handel's aria, you'll recognize the melody right away. The chorus of hostages takes part in the accompaniment, singing beautiful chords, and Lopez gradually alters the aria into something new, though he keeps the original's motif. It's so enchanting that eventually even the rebels add their voices to the accompaniment. In the middle of it, the orchestra takes over for a while, and the music is all built around Handel's melody. Let's listen to that one section on the computer. Everyone's so mesmerized by the beauty of Roxanne's singing that General Alfredo orders her to stop hypnotizing his soldiers. It's during all this when Gen realizes that the soldier he's so strangely attracted to is actually a woman, Carmen. The closing action of the act is when Roxanne's accompanist, Christoph, who's so ill he's delirious, suddenly attacks General Alfredo and is immediately shot dead by one of the soldiers. This is a huge shock to everyone, even the rebels, because they've been ordered not to shoot anyone. So Act One ends with a stunned chorus of prayer in several languages, finishing with a reprise of the end of the Peru chorus from the beginning of the opera. Without having actually seen the opera yet, if I had to pick my favorite scene, it would be the first scene of Act Two, because of the music and all that happens. This is the scene of La Garua, the strange heavy fog that the Peruvians believe has mystical powers. There's a recurring musical theme in this scene that's absolutely majestic, and it's the main theme of the act prelude. Thank you. Another 2 weeks have gone by, and people have started settling into a routine. But the arrival of La Garrua is a big event. It blocks out the sun, and everyone either welcomes it or curses it in their own way. Then suddenly, a soccer game breaks out in the living room, accompanied by wild, circus-like music. Then Roxanne and Hosokawa have a dreamy duet about all the time they've lost in captivity. They're clearly finding each other. The women who were liberated earlier hold a vigil outside the walls. It's an offstage chorus, and it causes a lot of excitement among the hostages, but it rattles the rebels. Then Carmen escapes to a corner by herself and sings a prayer to Santa Rosa de Lima. Stylistically, Carmen's aria stands apart from everything else in the opera. Lopez says that it had been in his mind since 2007, but he was saving it for the right project. Let me read you his own description of it. There's a certain candidness to this aria. It's shamelessly tonal, fragile, and emotional, but it's also one of the most intimate and arresting moments in the opera. Carmen is praying to St. Rose of Lima to help her rein in her awakening passions, but she also wants to be able to discover herself and her femininity, something she's been denying herself all this time by hiding behind a uniform. What is great about opera is that it can encompass my different styles depending on what's happening on stage, and I saw this moment as an opportunity to embrace purity, clarity, and simplicity. Unquote. And by the way, this aria is in Quechua, the indigenous language of the Andes. After Carmen sings it, she goes over to Gen, and their relationship takes a big step forward. There's a surprise aria from the gruff and dangerous General Alfredo, who pours out his heart about what he's been fighting for. He wants a country where the poor matter as much as the rich, a country where his wife isn't rotting in prison. He sings, "I want to live in resplendent light, not in the shadows of ruins." It's short, but really beautiful. Accented by chimes and harp and brass, it's got a deep sense of pain and dignity. It's a great moment. Right on the heels of that is another of my favorite parts, the teenage soldiers are watching the news, and they're excited because it's always all about them. They're famous. They're winning. It's totally naive. And Lopez gets that across with the music. This is another one I asked him about because it's another big stylistic departure. He wrote back, quote, "The news is a playful number, and it uses an array of percussion instruments, some of which are literally toys. I wanted to convey the fact that Ismael and Beatriz are still kids and are at least partly oblivious to their present circumstances. They watch the TV and get excited when they see themselves in the news, as if it were all some kind of game. Their naivete is as touching as it is dangerous. Only Cesar seems capable of understanding what is truly going on." Unquote. Cesar knows they're getting nowhere and that they're trapped. But he sings a heartfelt aria about his secret joy. Singing. Roxanne overhears him and is blown away by his voice. But when he realizes she's listening, he's ashamed and tries to run away. He throws open the front door to run outside, and blinding, glorious sunlight comes pouring into the mansion. La Garrua, the fog, has lifted, and everyone welcomes the miraculous light. And that's the end of the scene. The beginning of scene two is called Entering Utopia. A whole month has gone by. So far, I've neglected Messner, the Red Cross man. He's been tirelessly bringing supplies and helping with the negotiations, and now he enters, totally exhausted. And he finds the hostages and the captors all playing chess together and helping each other out like they're just a big, happy family. They've completely escaped or transcended the reality of their situation. And Roxanne is giving Cesar a singing lesson. They're working on the big tenor aria from Donizetti's The Elixir of Love. Oh, That was the original, sung by Roberto Alagna. But you'll recognize it right away in Bel Canto, even though César is a countertenor. All this détente is too much for Messner, and in a really touching and powerful aria, he breaks down. He knows this will all end badly, and he thinks he's failed them. He collapses on the floor in a fever, and together, hostages and captors tenderly wrap him in blankets and help him to bed. Then Father Arguedas leads everyone in evening prayers, and hostages and captors together sing a Gregorian chant. While this is happening, secret plans are made by Roxanne and Carmen and Gen to sneak Hosokawa up to Roxanne's room for the night. And later, in the middle of the night, Hosokawa and Roxanne sing a positively transcendental love duet in her bedroom. It has elements of the song Roxanne sang for him at the party, plus it quotes the Garua theme from the previous scene. Carmen and Gen get together too, downstairs in the china closet, just like in the book, and they have their love duet, which is much more lighthearted than Hosokawa's and Roxanne's. Then, from their respective hideouts, the lovers form the second of the two big love quartets of the opera. It rushes to the end of scene two. The last scene starts out as just another day. Messner has spent the night and is feeling much better, but he confides to Roxanne that now only a miracle will save the situation. The rebels start a soccer game in the living room, but it's time for César's voice lesson, so for the first time, they take their game outdoors. With Roxanne at the piano, César starts doing a classic vocal warm-up, but it's interrupted by a rumbling, and suddenly Peruvian soldiers come blasting in. César is killed, and so is Carmen, and Hosokawa, who is trying to shield Carmen with his body. There's smoke and gunfire everywhere until finally the vice president takes control and orders the soldiers to stop shooting. Gen finds Carmen, who dies in his arms as he sings a heart-rending "Don't Die" aria. Then the bodies are carried off, and everyone exits except Roxanne, who finishes the opera alone with a final aria, a farewell to Hosokawa, and a poetic summing up of the whole experience. And the orchestra ends the opera in a wonderfully classic, tragic opera way that's absolutely perfect. Let me close with the composer's own summation of the opera, and I quote, "Anyone and everyone are welcome to see Bel Canto, including first-time opera goers. It's engaging, fast-paced, constantly moving forward, and it even includes two big action numbers. The story is contemporary and relevant. We have lots of arias, ensemble numbers, big choral passages, great singers, and gorgeous projections. I've made every effort to keep the audience at the edge of their seats, and I must say that Kevin Newbery's staging is truly captivating." Unquote. Thank you for listening. I hope you really enjoy Bel Canto. The recordings of Rinaldo and the Elixir of Love excerpted in this commentary are used courtesy of Warner Classics.